Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. How you doing today, Marty?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Excellent. Listenerland, we have a really full conversation for you today, really deep and wide. We're going to do osteoarthritis in dogs and cats. I know Marty's already flinching. We're going to do treatment options. We're going to kind of weigh the pros and cons. There was just a very recent, a couple weeks ago, research article that dropped about the drug Librela. So we want to address that. It was brought to my attention by a listener. Thank you, listeners. If you have an idea for something or a question, drop it to us and we will figure it out for you. So here we are. This is what we got. And Marty's already just making wincing faces at me if you're watching the video.
No. I like talking about this stuff. It's just osteoarthritis it's just a hard thing for any of us to think about osteoarthritis for ourselves, our pets, you know, whoever.
Yeah. Living with it. Okay. So let's talk about our dogs and cats. They're going to have similar symptoms, crunchy, you know, limpy, gimpy, can't get up, don't want to get up, just lay here. Mm-hmm. Thanks. I'm good. All of that is going to be the same between the cats and dogs. How do the treatments and diagnosis differ between dogs and cats?
Cats are much more difficult to diagnose because people assume that their cat's just getting older and they're not moving around as much. And so they don't really think about the fact that they have osteoarthritis. But again, in dogs, it's still a kind of a challenge because people come in all the time, their dog is limping or maybe not putting weight on a leg at all, way beyond limping. And they say, yeah, but she's not in any pain. Like, well, you know, she's not walking normally. Yeah, but she's not in pain. No, you're totally in denial because yeah. Your pet is in pain, but they don't cry. The only time we'll see a pet cry in pain is if they have either serious trauma or they've slipped a disc in their neck, and those dogs will vocalize. But they won't vocalize because they've torn a cruciate. They won't vocalize because they have hip dysplasia or a back problem or elbow dysplasia, or, you know, one of 1,000 other causes of osteoarthritis. And so our perception, especially in cats, but in dogs as well, is that they're not in any pain because they're not crying. Well, just because tears aren't running down their cheeks doesn't mean that they're not in pain. So that's the first premise.
Can we have a whole conversation about the Stoics? In people, yeah. And see this finger that doesn't, you know, I'm not crying. That doesn't mean it doesn't hurt people.
Exactly.
So same for our dogs and our cats. Stoicism is a thing more extreme than in some breeds than others.
It is. And it's definitely breed related. You know, we see Labradors, they don't complain much. They were bred to break through ice cold water. They are tough dogs. Yep. They're not little foo-foo dogs, but even the foo-foo dogs don't typically complain very much. Mm-hmm. They just don't use the limb. And if it starts to be both back legs or both front legs, then it's really hard for them to walk. We right. do see dogs that come in just walking on their front legs. Like they have figured out how to elevate their rear end up off the floor because their knees are so bad that they learn to walk on their front legs. That is a step beyond what you should have been paying attention to. Like you missed the boat, folks. There's something really
bad. That's not okay. That is not okay.
No,
so
but it happens.
We know the dogs are in pain, even if they're not crying piteously.
Correct.
If they're not walking normally, they're in pain. That's just the right. bottom line and something you need to just know and understand and accept. So we've got a lot of options for treating osteoarthritis in both dogs and cats. Yes?
Well, more in dogs. We basically have one treatment in cats.
Okay.
Gotta love that, huh? Well,
better
one
than
drug
neuro
treatment.
Treatments. I mean,
yeah. And it's fairly recent. It's Solensia, and it's an injectable product similar to Librela, and we'll draw the parallels in a minute. The only other treatment options you have in cats are going to be glucosamines, which work pretty well, mm-hmm. or a diet change. And there are some really good diets on the market. There's a mobility diet from Purina, a mobility diet from Royal Canin, a mobility diet from Hills.
For cats.
That do, for cats, yep. And some of them are combined, for instance, KD and mobility, because all the cats that have mobility issues are generally elderly. And we see, I don't know, 20% of old cats have kidney problems. So they've come to market with products that do multiple things, like the TD helps with kidney diet in dogs and their dental disease. In cats, we see the mobility diets with kidney diet. There's some nice combination products on the market, but those are a nutritional approach and a very appropriate and very useful approach, but it's not a drug approach. There's no drug in the dog food or the cat food. So it's based on increasing the fatty acids, increasing the glucosamine, trying to improve joint lubrication, and just generally making the cat feel better. So dogs and cats, first and foremost, if they're overweight, get weight off of them, because that is going to be the best thing that you can do for them. Non-drug-wise or drug-wise, that is the one single thing that you can do to really improve their quality of life, is for them to not have to carry that much weight on those sore, achy, tired joints, backs, in whatever part of their body hurts. Mm-hmm. So get their weight down. And that's hard, because you have a dog or a cat that doesn't feel good. They don't want to move very much. Mm-hmm. And now you're asking them to lose weight. How do you lose weight? You move more or you eat less. Well, they don't want to eat less, because eating is fun, and they can't move more because it hurts. So you're really
The beautiful thing, to draw this distinction again, when we want our pets to lose weight, we are in control of that, and we can feed them less.
Yeah.
If we had as much control over our own diet as our dogs and our cats, it would be a good thing. Just saying.
Yeah, but it's not likely to happen. People all the time say to me, well, they must know. Okay, I don't even know that if I eat another piece of pizza or an extra Oreo that I'm going to gain weight. Like, I have a hard time drawing that correlation.
Because no, I know it. Oreo, just do it anyway.
So good.
Taco Tuesday, man.
I know. And they're like,
well, Taco Tuesday only comes once a week.
Yeah, if I have the choice between broccoli and Oreos, I'm going to pick an Oreo. So
I'm not. In that particular choice, I'm taking the broccoli. I loathe Oreos.
Okay. Okay, good.
No, I like vegetables, but
I like them too, but not as much as I like chocolate.
Oh, yeah. No, weird fact for the audience and for everyone else in the world, chocolate is like meh. I mean, it's okay, but it's not.
Good for you.
Yeah, no, Kim, my partner, Kim's life is chocolate.
And yeah, mine too.
He's in a very bad place now that chocolate has become tariffed around the world, and he's dying because he's not getting the chocolate he wants. So there's that. But we
don't. Yeah, well, I don't get through a meal without chocolate. So I'm in Kim's camp. I understand. So
you and Kim will be best friends. Weight.
Yeah. So weight management, very important. Yes. Dietary management, super important. There are glucosamine products on the market. Not a lot of them have good science behind them, but the Dasaquin, Nutramax, that whole line, Cosequin, there's good science behind some of the products. So please stick to the products that really have the science behind it. And you know that the supplement actually contains it, because the problem is most supplements are not regulated by FDA. And God knows we don't need more regulation, but we do have to be aware that not every product on the market actually contains what it says on the label, because it doesn't.
See, there's a good use for some regulations, y'all.
Yep. So there you go. We have, some people are fans of Adequin and some of those other products. There's, again, it's hard to find some of the science behind it. So it's a little tricky. If you've had good responses, great. If you haven't, okay, so be it.
MSM, any of the other.
Yeah. MSM and the other stuff that's in the glucosamines. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perna muscle, all this stuff. So there's some science behind that. As far as non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, there's one labeled for use in cats. It's called Ansior, and it's labeled to use for 3 days in a healthy cat. So does that mean your 16-year-old geriatric cat that needs it every day can't take it? Well, that's what the label says. So, again, you have to make some difficult choices on whether you're going to follow the label and what your veterinarian feels is safe and how you make decisions about what kind of care you're going to provide. Drugs like meloxicam, there's a black box on the label for meloxicam in cats. So, it's not a great choice. Do people do it? They do. It's not a great choice. The dose has to be infinitesimally small in a cat. That's different than a dog. Cats, if you give a cat Tylenol, one dose will kill a cat.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, because
one dose.
Tylenol is deadly. So I would assume most of the NSAIDs are as well for cats.
They're not very safe. Aspirin, you have to give it like an itty bitty teeny little dose every 3 days, if it's even allowed at all. So again, these are things you should not be using over the counter without speaking to your veterinarian. And most cats don't take aspirin unless they have some kind of a coagulation problem. So you're in general not going to be giving aspirin to a cat, and you cannot give Tylenol. It's not recommended. Cats develop Heinz body anemia from Tylenol. They'll literally become anemic. They develop these weird things in their red blood cells, and they blow up their red blood cells, and then the cats die. So please, please, please do not do things over the counter because they're not safe. So just don't go there. For dogs, we do have non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and some really good ones. We have carprofen, which came to market first, meloxicam, Medicam, which came to market second. There's etogesic, there's Deramax, there's a number of good non-steroidals. Galliprant is wonderful. So we have some really good products on the market for dogs, but they're just not crossover for cats. So that's part of the problem. And not every dog can tolerate a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory because they do have GI signs. They can have liver and kidney effects. So not every dog can take these drugs or take them at the label dose. You may have to give them at a lower than label dose. And LED is generally the recommendation for dogs, and that's lowest effective dose. So for instance, when we start meloxicam, we start at the label dose, and then we'll wait until the pet is comfortable, they've gotten good relief from it 2 or 3 weeks in, and then we start dropping tiny little amounts. And that's the advantage of the meloxicam in the liquid form over the tablets, or tablets like carprofen, Rimadyl, all that stuff, is when you drop those doses, you have to drop them by 25%. You have to cut the tablet into quarters. Yeah. But if you're using the liquid, you can go from 80 units to 78 to 75 to 72 to 70. So you can go very, very, very slowly titrating the dose down. And when you get to, say your dog is an 80-pound dog and you can get down to 55 units and they're comfortable, you get to 50 and they're not, you go back to 55 and you stay there to give the lowest effective dose. So you can give a minimal amount, reduce the side effects with the GI tract, reduce the kidney and liver issues, but still give your pet good pain relief because we want them comfortable. I don't want your dog, your cat walking around in pain. It's no better for them than it is for you. It's really pretty miserable.
It's bad.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible health verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Okay, so non-steroidal anti-inflammatories are NSAIDs, now specifically on dogs. They have really good benefits. They have some downsides, right? You were talking about GI bleeds in people and in dogs, obviously liver and kidney issues. What else is sort of the differential? Like, should I do this? Should I not? When I have to step up because the food additive isn't.
Yeah, that's generally the biggest concerns that we have. Like my dad couldn't take non-steroidals because it affected his blood pressure. And then you have to have the conversation, well, which is worse, high blood pressure and dying from that or being in chronic pain? So these are the decisions that you have to make. And sometimes the trade-offs are not easy. So that's why we try to give the lowest effective dose, try to find multimodal therapy. So you may give amantadine or tramadol or gabapentin. And a lot of people discuss whether tramadol gives us much pain relief in pets or not. We don't have a really good way to measure those scores. We have Glasgow scores and stuff that we can try to assess pain. But, you know, when you go to the ER and they give you the little chart and they say, what's your scale of pain? 0 to 10. Well, your pet can't tell you that. So we have to base our assessments on, do they grimace? Do they not move around very much? I mean, they're really hard things to assess. So multimodal therapy is the best. So you can give a non-steroidal with amantadine or glucosamine or gabapentin or tramadol or a diet change or weight loss or blah, 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 blah.
Above,
now, you can't combine non-steroidals. So you can't put a dog on Galliprant and Medicam or Medicam and Rimadyl. You can't combine those. You can't give aspirin with those. You just can't do that because the GI effects are terrible. You can't give steroids with those products. So if you have a pet that has to be on steroids for some other reason, you can't combine it with a non-steroidal. So be in touch with your veterinarian and make sure that they know all the drugs that your pet is on. So if you went to the referral center or the emergency clinic and they sent you home with another drug, you don't want to be on two drugs that your veterinarian doesn't know about. And you don't have that pharmacist that's overlooking your entire prescription to put the red flag up and say, whoa, you can't do this together. So multimodal therapy with diet, with nutrition, with all the stuff, we can oftentimes get our pet better relief. Laser therapy, Assisi loops, physical therapy, chiropractic, acupuncture, all this multimodal therapy can improve your pet's quality of life. Swimming for good exercise. There's lots of things that you can do. One of my doctors just had a dog that was suffering from an injury and was doing all of it. She was getting out of bed 45 minutes early every morning to do the physical therapy and put on the Assisi loop and do all the stuff, because there's a lot you can do, but you need to have someone that's overseeing the pet's care. Going to a chiropractor that isn't trained in veterinary can be risky because they don't know the physical changes that might be happening. I've seen chiropractors try to adjust a dog with a cruciate rupture. Mm-hmm. Well, you aren't going to fix that with an adjustment, or you can maybe manage
make it worse.
Pain, but right, you could make it worse. So yeah, those are the things, is see a veterinarian that knows all these therapies. See somebody that does acupuncture, chiropractic, veterinary spinal manipulation therapy, laser therapy, Assisi, all the stuff, because you have lots of choices. But then if they recommend that you go to physical therapy, or they recommend water therapy or some of those things, make sure somebody is overseeing all the stuff so that you're not doing things that are conflicting.
Good. And so what do we do when we lost the weight, we did the glucosamine, we've got them on Remedil, and it's still not enough? What's next?
Well, we do have Librela and Solensia as our last choices. Solensia is for cats, Librela is for dogs. They affect nerve growth factor. So they are a monoclonal A antibody. So cats can only have the cat one, dogs can only have the dog one. There are human equivalents to some of these products, and they can really make a difference in the pet's quality of life. Now, as you mentioned at the beginning, there was a recently published article on May 8th that talked about some of the rapid changes that can happen in the joints as a result of this. And there's also been people reporting on social media things like, well, my dog went into kidney failure and it was on Librela. Well, your dog was 14 and a half years old. We put him on Librela because they couldn't tolerate all the other stuff. We don't have a good way to assess whether Librela is going to cause some of these unusual reactions. And it's a very small percentage of patients that it happens in. But the dogs and cats that are on Solensia and Librela are generally not 2 years old. They're generally elderly that have comorbidities, that have a lot of things going on. And this may be your last ditch effort to get them comfortable. And if you do go to one of those products, there's actually a website that Librela has called Back to Play, because some of these dogs we put on Librela, they've felt so good on day two that they've gone out in the backyard, just ripped it up, and then they tear a cruciate or injure a disc or something else happens. So pay attention to the activity level. Don't just turn them loose and say, hey, look how much better you feel. Go to the website Back to Play for Librela. And they don't have one for cats because, well, let's face it, cats don't do the things dogs do. So pay attention to the stuff that's going on. And so non-steroidals, some of these other therapies are not without their risks. Is there a risk with Librela? There is, but there's a risk to other things as well. I've seen multiple dogs die from GI bleeds, perforations in their GI tract from products from non-steroidals. So there's nothing that's going to be 100% safe all the time. You know, there's just nothing. So you have to make the best decision that you can with your veterinary professionals to get the multimodal therapy set up. Mm-hmm. So start with weight loss, start with nutrition, start with the things that are going to give you the best bang for your buck and the least side effects, and then work your way through the rest of it. If your pets are on a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory twice a year, they're going to need blood work at least twice a year to make sure that their liver and kidneys aren't being affected by this. There's a whole bunch of things that happen. Typically, if we're going to see a bad side effect with a non-steroidal, it's in the first 3 days after we start it.
Oh, interesting.
It's not 6 months out.
It's not a cumulative.
It can be, okay. But the worst side effects that I have seen with liver and GI have been in the first 72 hours after you start those. So if you're starting one, don't do it as you're dropping them off at the boarding kennel. Don't do it as you're going to be out of town for the weekend. Be around, pay attention. And if you see anything that's changed, the color of their stool changes, they aren't eating as well. If any of those things are happening, stop the non-steroidal and see your veterinarian and get some help for them. Sometimes we'll put them on GI protectants to be on a non-steroidal so that they can continue to take them. So things like Pepcid or Omeprazole and Sucralfate and some of those products can be used to help protect against the side effects of the non-steroidals. There's nothing you can give that is 100% safe. There's just not.
No, there's not. So this is, we kind of like, I threw this at you earlier, and I think it's just a really fascinating thing. As we talk through some of this stuff, how similar, and there's a lot of studies that have been done in dogs because dogs and people are so similar and our systems are so similar. And so I wonder if you could just kind of lightly touch on that, because we're all people. We know what rheumatoid arthritis or osteoarthritis or, mm-hmm. you know, like we know what those things feel like. So help people mm-hmm. understand how similar dogs are in their actual systems to us.
Yeah. No question. There's a lot of similarities. And, you know, we talk about this all the time and people are like, what, really? Yeah, they have two kidneys, they have one liver, you know, all the same parts you have, the dogs have, all the same diseases we have, they have, and vice versa. So there's some interesting studies that have been done in dogs because we have those parallels. For instance, bone cancer in children and bone cancer in dogs are very similar to each other. So there's important research that can be done. There's neuromuscular diseases that we can see in people and in dogs. So there's some pretty interesting things that happen. But you can't assume that just because you can take this drug, your dog can, and vice versa. And for instance, things like CBD, we have absolutely no labeled product on the market from FDA. We don't know what the safety is. We don't know what the level of the active ingredient is. So, you know, some of the stuff that you think is, well, I can take this, so why can't I give it to my dog? Ibuprofen will kill a dog. Tylenol will kill a cat. Ibuprofen will kill a cat. So you can't just translate everything. You have to really have veterinary intervention because the people who have tried that before and know it's going to kill your dog or your cat, you don't have to try that experiment again. It's been done. Don't do it. You know, there's one kind of weird thing, and that's grapes. Like, why do grapes and raisins cause harm to the kidneys of some dogs, but not in people? I don't know. Every time I eat a grape, I'm like, oh, this is okay.
Well, and oddly enough, I mean, that particular one, I did not even know until I was well into my 20s. And I happened to be a head handling client, the very promising young Rhodesian Ridgeback female. And all of a sudden she wasn't at the dog show. And I asked my handling partner at the time, I'm like, where's whatever her name was? And she had eaten a bunch of, I can't remember now if it was raisin or grapes, and literally went into kidney failure. And like they rented a plane and this whole, there was like this whole story that went with it, you know? And I'm like, wow, okay, who knew? Guess I'm not sharing my glass of red wine with my dog anymore.
Not recommended. No, ma'am.
Not recommended. Got it. Heads
so
up.
Just, you know, be thoughtful, you know, look up the information. There are some really great websites that have information about toxicities. National Animal Poison Control has a nice website about toxicities. Mm-hmm. Pet Poison has some. So there's some great information out there, but just don't make any assumptions about something over the counter that you would consider giving to yourself or one of your family members without speaking to your veterinary professional first and making sure that it's safe for a dog or a cat, and it's safe with the other things that they might be taking already. You don't want your dog to be the footnote in the paper of, yeah, this didn't go well. You really like to avoid that.
Well, just in closing, you know, as we kind of wrap things up, I think that's a really important note too. I saw a social media post, which often fuels much of my conversation on the podcasts.
Right.
Well, you know, but no, it was from someone who works in veterinary medicine who had a client who was complaining because blah, 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 blah. And you've said it a number of times here and other places. As clients, having some respect and understanding what's going on in a veterinary clinic's life, not blaming the clinic for killing your dog on Librela because you put it on the Librela because it was going to die anyway and you wanted to make its life a little easier. You know, that kind of stuff. Touch on that just a minute.
Yeah. You know, it's just a trade-off with everything we do. And as veterinary professionals, we try to educate our clients and make the best mutual decisions that we can for those set of circumstances. And we may make recommendations for something that just isn't practical for you. Either you can't feed the food because your dog won't eat it, or you've got grandma in the house that's undermining everything you do, or, you know, you try to give a drug, but it gets to be too expensive. You know, there's all those things that we really try hard to work with so that we can, like, we try to balance everything in your life, but there may be forces in your life, whether they're financial or emotional or physical, that we can't. And we need to know those things as veterinarians. We're not social workers. It was very clearly pointed out to me that we're not social workers, but we do find ourselves in a social worker position frequently because we hear all the conversations about, I know stuff about my clients that I just like,
you know, I don't need to know that.
I know what color their underwear is because their dog had to eat it and then I had to make them vomit it up. I know stuff that I don't really want to know about my clients. I've seen their skin lesions. I've heard their sad stories about their family. I mean, I've got clients that have been clients for 44 years. These are people who I'm close to. And I want to make sure that we make the best decision that we possibly can for your pet. And back in the day, you used to have the same veterinarian for 44 years. Right. And that's not happening anymore. We have young veterinarians that are coming in, thank goodness, because we can't all work the same number of hours that we used to. We just have to really understand each other. And as veterinarians and as clients, the better we can share and communicate what the limitations are. I can't do this, but I can do that. Let's figure out, like Dr. Amon, that has the dog that, I mean, she literally won select at her specialty with a dog with an injury that she had worked through, but she made huge sacrifices to do that. And if she had, you know, three kids and all the other stuff going on in her life, it wouldn't have happened. So right. Be honest with your veterinary clinic, with your veterinary staff, and work through to see where you can come up with that middle ground for the treatment plan. If you can't afford this, can you do this? If you can't do this, can you do that? You know, what kind of things can we do to balance everything? Because we want the same thing you want. And that's a long, healthy, safe, comfortable life for your pet. And we can't help you with that unless you share some of the limitations that you have so that we can maximize your pet's quality of life and quantity of life. It's not just about how long they live, it's how well they live.
Yes, that is the perfect place to end this conversation. I love that. Thank you so much, yes. Mark. Everybody out there in listener land, be sure to like, share the show, tell all your friends and fam. Send it on to your next door neighbor that's got problems. Check it out. We appreciate y'all's support and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are. In the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc., sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.